The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the hottest show on the podcast airwaves. It is Kip Kiefer. It is Tony Curry. Kiefer and Curry, another edition. Last week, Tony, we had some heavy construction going on as we build our personal Mount Rushmores of influential females in our lives.
Yes.
That was a great subject, and I really enjoyed the show. I hope you got some good feedback on that.
We did. It was awesome. It was fantastic. And, of course, I heard from Kay Taylor, my high school teacher, who is now in her 70s, and she said, "You made me cry." So job well done, my friend.
Can't beat that. You, right back at you. That was a fun show to do. So, of course, with the momentum of that, we're going back to sports today. How about that?
Let's do it.
Because there's two monumental events going on this week. And Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry have to get their 2 cents in on both of those. One of them is kind of appropriate for us to talk about because we focused a whole show a couple of weeks ago on March Madness and the phenomenon it is. And did it live up to its name this year, Tony, or what?
It really did. A 4, 2 5s and a 9. Who would have thunk it? We've got three teams in the Final Four for the first time ever. UConn, I believe, is in for its 6th or 7th time. And I will just say this, Kip, when we go into this, and I got toyed into the number one seeds, I will take 5 good players who understand a system, who can make 3s and 2s over a team with 1 incredible player who lives and dies by the 3-point line and doesn't play to their philosophies. I got toyed into the Brandon Miller, who was a player of the year for Alabama, out. Zach Edey, player of the year, they're out. Drew Timmy gets 4 fouls with 17 minutes left in the game. They're out. I got screwed up. And I don't know anybody who's got this Final Four. If they say they got this Final Four, they're full of hooey. But it should be.
No way.
And listen, I mean, UConn's probably playing the best basketball out there right now. But FAU, a team that's 35-3, we can't look past them as well out of Conference USA.
The Florida Atlantic Owls, which are in Boca Raton, Florida.
A team that UAB beat this year.
Unbelievable. It's really amazing that they're there and what they've accomplished. And to have them in Miami, which are only about 45 miles apart, in the finals, is pretty extraordinary. So it has been really fun to watch. And I think this just, once again, adds to the drama and what we talked about. The reason this event is so popular is because anything can literally happen in a 1-game deal. You could play these matchups in a 7-game series like they do in the NBA or other sports, baseball, hockey. And in a 7-game series, there's no way these teams that are beating these other more high-profile teams that's going to happen. But in 1 game, Tony, anything can happen.
There's no doubt. And it may be the first time, Kip, in bracket history that if you are leading in points before the Final Four, chances are you're a winner. Because I don't have anybody. We had 47 guys in ours, and none of them had UConn, Miami, Florida Atlantic, or San Diego State not only making the Final Four, but winning it all. So every guy's got a red line by their eventual champion, and most people, of course, had Alabama to get that far. And I was one of those guys that got duped in. I had Bama against Gonzaga, so once they're out. But I have nothing left. I had nothing left before the Elite Eight. And I was leading out of 47. I was leading going into the Elite Eight. I felt pretty good about it. But, it's falling apart. The bracket truly is exploded this year.
It's amazing. I had Texas the other day. At least in my Final Four, I would have gotten 1. And they couldn't even cooperate and hold on against Miami. So I'm watching 4 teams that I expected to be playing golf long ago.
So let me ask you this. Do you like it this way, or do you like it when we have the Blue Bloods? We have the North Carolinas, the Kentuckys, and I know the Kentuckys haven't been there in a while, the Kansases. And I guess you can make an argument that UConn's somewhat of a Blue Blood. They've won national titles. But the other three, is it fun? It's fun to this point. But now, are we really going to crown the Owls as national champions on Monday?
Yeah, I love that question because I've had the same thoughts that throughout the tournament, and we talked about it on our show a couple weeks ago, the opening rounds, the first 2 rounds that first weekend is what really captivates a lot of the public, I think. And you even said as it goes on, it's kind of a letdown because there's so many fewer teams. But now when you get to this point, I think it lacks something not to have one of the Blue Bloods or the really hallowed teams in the finals And I imagine the ratings, and I will, we'll see if I'm right about this. I think the ratings will suffer a little bit because there are no name brands here.
I totally agree with you. I mean, even like a Villanova or Virginia or someone who's just a proper, or even the Gonzaga. I mean, a team that's been to Elite Eights, I think, 5 years in a row. You kind of want to play off that. And you know, those are teams. It's funny how we see people rooting against the Blue Bloods when they've got the Fairleigh Dickinsons and even the FAUs. And then when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, do we really want to see four Cinderellas playing for a national championship? I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. I think the ratings are going to suffer a little. So we'll look forward to that. It's Saturday and Monday coming up this week. And the women's, I think, finals for the NCAA, their NCAA basketball tournament are Sunday, Tuesday. So a lot of hoops coming up this weekend and beyond.
It's going to be great.
Let's shift gears, Tony, because as you know, yesterday on my show here on TKR Need to Know, I talked about my trip to Florida this last week a little bit. But I want to focus on the aspect of one of the reasons I went down there is I wanted to see both my Atlanta Braves in action in their brand new, and it's fabulous. It's in Venice, Florida, which a lot of people don't really realize where that is. It's just between Port Charlotte and Sarasota, right in the middle of the West Coast. There's a fabulous beach right by called Siesta Key that if you've ever investigated Gulf beaches, and folks in Alabama, there are beaches outside the panhandle. A lot of folks do not understand that, but it's absolutely the truth. But the facilities, Tony, that these teams are building now, and the Yankees, of course, started the trend in Tampa. These facilities and the stadiums they play in, absolutely fabulous. I mean, it is such a cool thing to do, to go down if you plan a trip and you like baseball. The next night we caught the Braves again down in Fort Myers at the JetBlue Stadium, which is the Red Sox new park. And they even have an imitation green monster in left field to get guys used to playing that. So it was a great trip. But what I wanted to talk to you about as opening day looms this Thursday for another quick sprint to the finish line, 162 game season. we're going to see baseball in a whole different, the grand old game, America's pastime, is going to be a lot different. And having just seen two games, I thought we could talk about that because they have made major rule changes that I can tell you from a fan experience completely changed the way I watch the game.
No, there is four particular major changes that I wasn't even aware of until you brought this up. You know, we're going to talk Major League Baseball, and of course, I'm a Cincinnati guy, so I love Major League Baseball. This is one of my favorite times. It's a hallowed day coming up on Thursday when the Cincinnati Reds play at Great American Ballpark. They traditionally always open the season as the first team. It'll be the first time in Major League Baseball history, by the way, that every Major League team will be playing on opening day, which is really, really cool. But who are these knuckleheads out there that say the games are too long or that the game needs to change? Major League Baseball is the only sport out of the major sports who have purists. We always talk about the purist. And of course, I was always a purist when I was 20, 30, 40, 50. Now that I'm 57, I'm starting to look at some of these rules changes. But some of the changes are just absolutely off the wall. And in some cases, I like it. Some cases, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point there because baseball, I think one of the charming things about it and kind of the things that make it stand out is that you never had to deal with a clock before. Yep. It was just the pace of the game itself dictated the action. If a batter wanted to step out and readjust his batting gloves and the pitcher wanted to take a stroll around the mound and look to the heavens for inspiration, that's just all part of the game. You get 27 outs and however long that takes to make that happen, that was where it is. So the first adjustment you're going to see on Thursday is a giant pitch clock in the outfield wall that visible from home plate straight on. And another one, just like the NBA has, instead of a shot clock, this is a pitch clock right behind the plate where you can glance up watching the batter and the umpire and the catcher. and see how many seconds are left before a guy needs to throw another pitch.
There is nothing worse than, I will say this, when you have an incredibly deliberate pitcher that has to walk off the mound every pitch. And certainly when you're talking about situations where the bases are loaded, maybe it's a close game late in the game. I certainly understand the game comes to a halt. And, and I was a Sean Casey fan for the Cincinnati Reds. The guy had a Rafael Nadal thing where he had to do the whole brow wipe down, the whole thing. But not Rafael Nadal. He did it in a half a second. Sean Casey would take at least 5 or 6 seconds to check his batting gloves. He had to tap his bat a certain way before every stinking pitch. And I'm like, let's go. Now, if you've got a pitcher, and traditionally speaking, when pitchers have good rhythm, and that is they're just rolling off pitches and they pitch fast, those are the better pitchers in the league because they do catch a rhythm. And sometimes it's good to call a timeout, which, by the way, you can only do once now per bat. And call them off a little bit, slow them off. We see it happen in every other sport where you call a timeout when you feel like your momentum's changing. But my big question is, and we've seen this in college ball, we see it in little league ball, will it be enforced? I mean, going into college hoops this year, we had a new flop rule. It was called 6 times the first weekend. I can't remember being called again. If you're too late with the pitch, it'll be an automatic ball. And if you're a batter and you're not in the box 8 seconds before the clock goes off, you get called a strike. Will they actually enforce it? I can't wait to see the first time it's enforced.
Well, in spring training, they were pretty hardcore. The Braves' very first game, as a matter of fact, they had the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth with 2 outs. Their batter that was up, and it was somebody who didn't make the club, so that's not important. But he was fiddling around and didn't get back in the box. He had 2 strikes on him, Tony. No way. He didn't get back in the box before the 8-second countdown, and he was rung up. Strike 3, game over.
Really? So,
wow.
And we witnessed, and we'll talk about the rules of the pitchers now. Again, it's 15 seconds if there's nobody on, and that clock starts, and it's got to be operated from upstairs. So we've got another booth official, which is just what we need in the sports. But this guy's only job, it looks like, as soon as the ball makes contact with the pitcher's glove from the throwback to the plate, from what I saw, the clock resets right that second. Not even when he gets on the rubber. It's as soon as he gets the ball, it starts. So, I mean, I will say this, from an interest standpoint, and I sympathize with what you said. I like kind of the charm and the old school way that baseball was played. Of a lot of, and sometimes it was frustrating how long it took the batters and pitchers to go. But the action is pretty much continuous, which is, I'm just warning everybody, it's going to take some getting used to because you're just like, what game is this? You don't even play that way on the playground.
No, so, and I wonder too, Kip, because what makes a Major League Baseball go? It's television, and everyone's trying to fit inside these hours. It's amazing how you could be watching a college football game. It may be 37-36 or maybe 6-3, but somehow they always fit it within that 3-hour window. The average Major League Baseball time last year was 3 hours and 6 minutes, which was the second longest average time for Major League Baseball in history, which is hard to believe because I swear I saw some 4.5 hour games last year. And that was the part of the, again, I hate being called purist. I hate being pigeonholed into an agenda or into a group, but that was part of the charm of the day. In college football, you tailgate all day. It's an all day event. I love college football, basketball, and I love the NBA because I know I can catch a 2-hour game, go back to work, make it in time for dinner. But when it goes in a Major League Baseball game, what's 3 hours to watch a game? I think the other thing that's really interesting, and I was really thinking a lot about this last night, in other major sports, you have timeouts. And for the most part, there's no one dictating any timeout during any particular play, whether it's the NBA, the NHL, whatever, unless you're talking about timeouts. And certainly in sports, it's the under 16, the under 12, the under 8, the under 4 when they do timeouts. In Major League Baseball, you have 17 timeouts. You basically have a timeout every half an inning, and that is a time for us to get up and go buy something to drink, or maybe we're going to go and talk to a person next to us, we're going to go pee, whatever we're going to do. And so I think maybe just the deliberate nature of the game and the fact that it's one of the oldest games ever played is what makes me feel comfortable. I know when I go to a Major League Baseball game, I can actually relax and have a conversation, which is something really nice. But in this world where everything's got to be coming at us and the news cycle's flipping in 3 minutes, it's got to be faster and faster and faster. It should be really interesting to see how it goes.
Now, we also have adjustments to the pitcher's routine. He's got to be within that time frame, but he can do 2 per at bat. He can step off or throw to first if there's a runner on, but he can only do that twice. Mm-hmm. If he does it a third time, he better get the guy out, because if he throws over a third time and fails, the runner is awarded second base. That happened in the game we were at. Acuna was on first for the Braves. They tried to pick him off twice right away. Later in the bet, I don't know if the pitcher forgot or if he thought he had a good chance, but that was odd that, you know, the announcer screams, violation, runner awarded second base.
Well, they're not going to be digging up Lou Brock, but they are trying to bring the stolen base back. And, of course, traditionally speaking, we see teams, the Astros have been incredible at it the last few years where they're stealing bases, and just think the difference between a single and a double. One of the reasons they're doing that is, by the way, last year we had the least amount of singles in Major League Baseball that we've had since 1968. There are more home runs, and we know the chicks dig the long ball, but there are less singles, and so we're going to be talking about shift changes and everything else. That's one of the reasons that they're employing a lot of these things, because they want more guys to get those chip shots and get those singles. But, yeah, it's going to be really interesting once a guy throws over twice. And sometimes you've got the obligatory, you know, even when the guy's 3 feet off the base, they're just kind of throwing it over there, lobbing the ball over there. You'll not see that again. But will you see that third throw? Because if he does not make it, like you said, it's a balk. He gets the base automatically. Will you see some guys, and it takes me back to the old Joe Morgan days. I remember when you had a foot in the dirt, man, you were halfway to second base. He's got a foot in the dirt. You knew he was going to go. It's going to be amazing to see if those pitchers are willing to throw back over there in third, and how big of a lead will those fast players like Acuna get off first base, knowing that if they throw over there and don't get him, they're getting second base anyway. And will that count as a second base, or will that be counting as a stolen base, or will that just be a balk then?
I think it's basically, you know, violation. I don't think it counts the stolen base, but that's unfortunate, because that sequence, it was 3-2, and you know, I guess he just couldn't help himself. He had to throw over there because the pitch before was fouled off, and my friend Mark, who I was sitting with at the game, said, I was watching Acuna on that pitch. He says he took off before the guy even, you know, gripped the ball, basically. He said he was standing on second when the guy fouled it off. So once those two throws have come, those guys, and this is pun intended, have a license to steal, Tony.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So one thing you'll notice, too, the bases have been increased considerably in size. And that this is a move I think is a good idea, because, you know, that's too much tight space at first base with the first baseman trying to maneuver the bag and the runner digging down the line and lunging at the base. There were a lot of collisions and injuries and guys getting stepped on. The base being wider, still in fair territory, it cuts down the distance between the plate and first base and between first and second by 3 inches. So I don't think that's going to be a major significant thing in terms of the strategy of the game. But from a player safety standpoint, to me, it makes a lot of sense.
No, and I think that's a great idea, and it probably allows Fox to put more cameras on it.
<That's right. laughs>
we're gonna have cameras on every corner now of a base that's a slightly bigger. And 3 inches does not sound like much, but, you know, in life, 3 inches can mean the world.
Oh, major. Now, the other big change is defensive deployment, and I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this, because you're allowed to have a pitcher, a catcher, and 7 other fielders on the field. And my philosophy is that you should be able to deploy your defenders wherever you want, but no. Baseball doesn't see it that way anymore, because now on your infield, you have to have 2 players on the left side, on the third base side of second, and 2 players on the first base side. And they cannot be in shifts, as we've seen commonly in recent years, where a lot of teams are running the shortstop or the third baseman into short right center field. Also, all the infielders must be on the infield. So either on the infield dirt or the infield grass. You cannot even position your heels on the edge of the outfield grass. You have to be totally in the dirt, because there's a lot of guys. But here's my thing, and a lot of this is fueled by what you talked about a couple weeks ago, watching Pete Rose in the batting cage be able to pretty much at will hit every target he was aiming at, and basically being able to call his shot. Tony, I'm sorry. If you are a professional baseball player and get to the highest level, you should be a good enough hitter to exploit defensive holes.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, that's. I was wanting to hear your thoughts on that.
You've got to be able to go opposite field. And the crazy thing is 23% of all plays in Major League Baseball last year, there was some type of shift, not necessarily three infielders or even four on one side of the field. 51% of the time against lefties. Lefties just can't go right field, period, which was just crazy. And you saw the shift. And listen, again, as a purist, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? It's like, if you want to beat us, then stop us. You know, why are you running, why are you running up the score? Then just stop us. If you want to get a hit, I'm in the batting box every single night thinking to myself, okay, there's a shift and they're going to shift it every time. I'm just going to start poking it through the right side if I'm a lefty. The average batting age, average last year, do you know what it was? You want to take a stab at it?
I know it wasn't very good, like 270, maybe?
It was 243. Major League Baseball's average for the entire season was 243. I thought to myself, and one of the reasons they're doing the shift, and this is what Major League Baseball is saying, is two things. First of all, what I brought up earlier, there was the least amount of singles since 1968. They want more of those singles. It's more entertaining. The home run certainly brings a rousing ovation. I get that. But you need to have singles because it's a bigger part of the game. The second thing is they want to allow the infielders to make more spectacular plays. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, when I see a guy getting thrown out from the middle of right field, that's a pretty spectacular play. But they're like, hey, listen, we got these great all-star infielders. We got these shortstops. We got these first and second and third base players. It's going to allow them to make more diving plays, which probably means more injuries, but more diving plays, which is a spectacular agenda for Major League Baseball. So whatever you say, I kind of like this rule just because I think it reminds me of Little League. It's not, to me, it's not fair. You have a lot of Little League kids that are hitting T-ball, and you got six kids on one side of the field because they know they're going to hit it to the left every time. It's like, you give these guys a shot. But I also agree with your point. These are Major League Baseball players, for God's sakes. If there's no one on the right side, poke it through and be done with it.
Well, baseball was trying to accomplish and get rid of a perception that a lot of sports writers have been talking about for the last few years, that baseball had become, and not to its, and in this case, to its detriment, just a three outcome game, basically. It was either a walk, a strikeout, or a home run. And even putting the ball in play, you mentioned how low the averages are. The strikeouts are up at alarming rates because the pitchers are so good. Everybody throws 100 now. Remember, that used to be a novelty. Everybody, all the players would come up to the top step and the fans would be buzzing because a guy could hit 100 on the radar gun. It's just standard operating procedure now.
If you go 20 years ago and pull up the Guinness Book of World Records for the fastest pitch, it was Nolan Ryan at 102 miles an hour. I think I still have a copy of that. Last year in Major League Baseball, there were 29 pitchers who threw 100 or better. 29 pitchers who threw 100 or better. And I'm all about, listen, I like scoring. I'm not one of those guys that wants to sit around and watch a 1-0 game. I'm not. That's probably why I'm not a huge soccer fan. I love to see scoring. People love to see scoring. They'll watch it. They'd much rather see a 45-44 game in college football than a 6-3 game. You're going to have those people going, I love these defensive games. It's not fun to watch. But there's a couple other things that I think we could do to help that a little bit. One thing that I'm surprised they're not doing is lower the mound. Lower the mound a little bit.
Yeah.
You can see the baseball much better. If they're throwing 100, 200, 3 miles an hour in and out, and I mean, some of these guys are just throwing fastballs all day. That's all they throw. They throw a changeup because it's easy, and they throw a fastball. They're going from 99 to 68, and they're just going back and forth. You'll see pitchers now throwing, you know, 10, 11 fastballs in a row. But, I mean, I think there's other ways that we can certainly explore some offense in Major League Baseball, and I think, you know, maybe dropping the mound an inch or two could have a vast effect on that.
Yeah, and teaching guys to bunt again.
Yes.
Nobody in the major leagues knows how to bunt. And it's to me, when I was learning the game, it was the easiest thing in the world because all you do is catch the ball with the bat. That's basically how you bunt. But now you got guys up there and their bats are like pointed up in the sky and they're jabbing at it. I mean, that they have no idea how to do it.
No.
So, you know, the some of the nuances, the hit and run, the bunting, maybe with more base runners, we'll see some of that starting to come back. And the stolen base is one of the most exciting plays in the game. You can remember all the great players, the Ricky Hendersons. You mentioned Lou Brock, of course, Maury Wills, all the great base stealers through the years. The Cardinals having that great teams with Ozzie Smith and all those guys who just ran wild. So that's wildly entertaining, and I think that's what they're trying to get back to. So I applaud that. But I thought it would be interesting to have this discussion so people don't turn on their first game of the year and just be shocked at what they see. Because I'm telling you, it's a different viewing game now. And let me just say this before I wrap up my baseball rant here. I know they've done a lot of market research too, and you always hear people say baseball is boring. And to you and I, let's call ourselves traditionalists, not purists.
There you go.
Because I'm not very pure in any category. But traditionalists like us appreciate that baseball is that way. But I guess to make it a modern-day product, these changes will be interesting. And it will be interesting to see if their bottom line and enthusiasm of their potential customers and their current customers will be positively impacted.
Well, we got another show on this TKR network called Adapt or Perish. If you don't change, your sport is going to die. In Major League Baseball, I think they're always trying to make changes, but they don't really fully adopt those changes. And again, I think the pitch count's going to be really interesting. The one thing, Kit, that they did adopt during the regular season, not the postseason, but it will be a sure thing this year, is that ghost runner on second base in extra innings. That's going to be a full-time deal, even in the postseason. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, again, that was a radical change, and supposedly the excuse was it was during the COVID era to shorten games and was, you know, with the players' benefit in mind, that the longer they're out there, the more vulnerable they are and whatnot. But then they kind of liked it because, you know, you had a lot of games. And again, pitching's so dominant. I don't like watching a 16 and 17 inning game. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're saying, you know, it's somebody score a run for Gus. You don't even care if it's the other team by that time. So that's not a good thing. So I kind of like the concept, but I don't know. Once again, it's the same thing we're just talking about. I mean, you would think that teams would try to bunt the runner to third and then you'd have a couple of shots to get him in. Nobody does that. They just try to hit it out. You know, guys are swinging for the fences. So I don't know from a strategy standpoint if it's really, because I think that was another idea of implementing that, was to give the fans and all the commentators and the broadcasters, you know, how do you think they're going to, and you heard guys all year last year going, how do you think they're going to play this? And I'm going, they're not going to do anything. They're going to try to get a hit and drive him in from second.
Exactly.
They're not going to use him. They're not going to hit behind him like a real professional player could do, or lay down a bunt, because, you know, we're too manly an era for that.
No, it did shorten Major League Baseball extra inning games last year by 1.7 innings. So I guess it does make them. There is something, though, and you were talking about traditionalists. I'm a romanticism, right? I'm into the romanticism of Major League Baseball. When I go, I just feel like I'm in hollow ground no matter what I want. And I got to get up to Fenway. I've never been there. I've never been to Wrigley. So there's a bunch of ballparks I want to go to. I kind of like the idea, as a guy who loves to play baseball overs. This is certainly something I love to see, because certainly if you get the over 9 and it's 4-4, you know you're good to go. But yeah, just to hurry it along a little bit, but there is something. I've been part of a couple of 18, 19 inning games, and it's pretty amazing to say you went to one of those games. It's pretty cool. But I don't think anyone likes the idea that you're given a base runner. You're just given a guy. But what do we do in college football? We put them on the 25, right, in overtime. I mean, you could have played just a three-hour epic game. It could be 45-45, and we're giving you the ball on the 25. The good thing is the other team gets the same opportunity, so there you go.
Yeah, I was actually at one of the all-time games that you just described. It was a Braves-Mets game.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know when it was, but it went into the 18th inning. And the only reason it got that far, the Mets had scored two runs in the top of the 15th. The Braves were completely out of players, and they had a big country boy relief pitcher named Rick Camp, who was a pretty good athlete, a big old guy. And they had nobody to pinch hit for whoever the pitcher was in the game at the time, and he couldn't hit at all. So they summoned Rick Camp from the bullpen to pinch hit. And damn, Tony, if he didn't hit one over the fence to tie the game, which is still one of the most incredible things I've ever witnessed, because it was so unlikely. It was like Fairleigh Dickinson knocking off Purdue the other day. That kept the game going. And Ron Darling, who's was a great pitcher for the Mets and still their broadcaster, talks about that game. And he finally went to Bobby Valentine, the manager, in like the 17th inning, and said, if we get the lead, I know I just pitched 2 days ago, but you're putting me in because I'm ending this.
No doubt.
You use a descriptive word. And sure enough, that's what happened. The Mets scored in the top of the 18th, and Ron Darling, a starting pitcher who had just gone 7 innings 2 days before, came in and nailed it down because he had had enough of being there.
That's hilarious. Now, of course, Ron on the Major League Baseball Network, you can see him every single day. You know, it's interesting, and I'm sitting here talking about Major League Baseball with you, and I'm getting so excited for opening day coming up on Thursday, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I may not like some of these changes, but if some of those changes bring in some younger generation of fans, yes, and I get that, then they're going to watch, and that's fine because I'm always going to watch. I even when they started doing seven-inning doubleheaders, I was like, what the hell are we doing, a seven-inning doubleheader? I hated that. If you're going to play two games, you play two games. You play the entire time. I hated that. But I'll be glued to the TV coming up on Thursday. What a great weekend with March Madness and Major League Baseball going off at the same time. Great topic, man.
Yeah, and just a week away from the Masters. There's great sports viewing this time of year. And I have just been working with my son on creating my lifelong dream, Tony. I am going to have my home theater up and running for opening weekend for baseball. I cannot be more excited. It is awesome.
That's going to be great, man. I can't wait to see it.
So it's been a lot of fun. The ball will be in your court next week. So you've got to spend a lot of waking hours wondering what we're going to have on Kiefer and Curry, because I hope people are starting to understand that you never know. It's like Forrest Gump. You never know what you're going to get.
We may talk about a box of chocolates next Monday. You never know.
Hey, there's a lot of variety in there.
Hey, we got Easter right around the corner, my friend. Who knows?
I know. So anyway, it'll be the thoughts of Tony Curry next week, and I'd be happy to ride along on whatever wagon that pulls up. But this has been a blast, and let's play ball.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.